Blog Talk Radio.
JH Experience with co-host Dolly Miller Brennan.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
And now your host, the notorious MJH.
Go so far as stick rock cocaine up my butt.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It is me, the notorious MJH.
That's a good way to start. Hello, I tell you, right now, as my daddy would say, it's colder than a well digger's butt in December here. And I just looked on the TV on the weather station, and it's colder in Oklahoma than it was in the South Pole. Is our weather screwed up or what?
Well, it snowed here the other day, yesterday.
Yeah, snow here lasts forever. It's on the ground, and it's there until the spring thaw.
Well, we're not that bad. Ours melted yesterday. It snowed yesterday, and then it melted, but somebody decided to wreck my car, so I'm not really happy about that. They slid on the ice.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they're all right. They're fine, but, you know, the car, you know, spun around and went ass end into a Jersey wall, you know, those big cement walls in the middle
yep.
of the interstate.
Yep.
So, yeah, I'm sitting around all day, not mobile. This is MJH, not mobile today.
I tell you, I think tonight I'm going to order a pizza. I think I really am. I'll let somebody else get out in the snow. I'm looking out my window. It looks like Chicago's Larry, but there's about a 6-foot, you know, wall of snow there that they built up where they plowed a lot. And probably got about 2 feet on the ground, and it'll stay there until spring. You know, everybody says snow is so magical and so pretty. It's all right that you have to move around in that crap. That's a different story.
Well, it is pretty, but... Yeah, it's great when you're in school and you get the day off, but when you have to, when you grow up, you have to pay bills. And
pretty until it's there for a while and it gets dirty. Dirty snow is not attractive.
You see, I like to go where the snow is, hang out for a while, and then leave. I don't like when the snow comes to where I am.
Well, it's snowing here right now. I couldn't believe I got the wind and it's snowing, Chris. I'm up pretty high and everything's blowing. Well, anyway, we're so happy to have Larry back here, and I think he's going to talk to us about the situation in Egypt, and I found it interesting that they're on financial collapse, and first one nation collapses, and then another, and the French today, the president of France said multiculturalism doesn't work. He said, we're not going to allow it in France. He said, you come into France, you're going to melt into French culture, or you can get out. The UK, the United Kingdom said, multiculturalism doesn't work. When you come in here, you're going to melt into an English values or you're going to get out. Germany, of all nations, said, you're going to come in here, you're going to melt into German values or you're going to get out. The problem is...
Oh, that's great, but what is France going to do if people come there and don't do what they say? Are they just going to be rude to them? Because they ain't going to do dick else because they're a bunch of pussies over there. So all the rest of the country is great for them, but I really don't give a crap what France has to say.
What they're saying is that we're all saying that multiculturalism, and this is what that does, it establishes separate cultures, separate identities, separate values, separate
rules,
separate
laws. Oh, I get the point, and we should do that here, but that's not going to happen while Mr. Obama's in office. You know.
Oh, exactly, when he's in office. You know, I can't believe that. Well, anyway, the thing of it is that we have Larry here to talk with us tonight and talk to us about the situation in Egypt. It grows more precarious every moment. I mean, I see all the jubilation in the street. They had the same thing in Iran. In Iran, they had
the
same kind of
jubilation. Now,
the
people in Egypt, those are not pussies. I am so proud of those people for standing up against their government. That is just the most awesome thing. And
that's what they did in Iran against the Shah of Iran after. And after the Shah of Iran, you had the same exact thing in the street when the Shah was deposed. And then you have a society now in Iran, the stone
women
in the street.
But the Shah was a good guy, though. The Shah was a good guy.
No, Mike, the Shah was not a good guy.
Well, the Shah had his problems. No, the Shah had...
Mike, the Shah was not a good guy. You don't know your history.
No, wait a minute.
The Shah of Iran, the guy in there prior to the Ayatollah Khomeini, he wasn't a good guy.
He was like Mubarak. He was a U.S. dictator who was put into power to protect U.S. interests.
Now, so he was
a good
guy.
That's in my book, Modern Slavery, The Fight for Freedom.
Right. When they took over them, what happened was, look what happened now. They stoned women in the streets publicly because this is the kind of... And then the director of intelligence yesterday, he said, it's a secular organization. Today, his staff had to recant everything he said. Diane Sawyer asked him what was going on in London. He said, he didn't know. No one had told him. He hadn't had a chance to look at the press report. What? The director of intelligence is reading the newspaper for these events? It's a very sad situation. He looked to me like he could have had a stroke. I'm serious. You know, he was very confused and disoriented. And I worked in healthcare management for years, and you can see those signs. So I don't know if that happened. Or maybe just being in contact with Obama just really freaked him out, just like the king of Saudi Arabia had a heart attack after speaking with Obama. He got so mad he had a heart attack and thought he died. But anyway, that's nuts. Neither here nor there. Larry, please tell us what's going on in Egypt and how it's going to affect us here.
Before I do that, for those who aren't familiar with my book, Modern Slavery, The Fight for Freedom, and has never heard any of my interviews, I want to give you a little background on me so you know what my experience is. I'm not an expert on Egypt, so what I've had to do is I've had to look to some current events to get some key pieces of information that I needed on Egypt. But in my book, it's a large portion of it is dedicated to understanding history and how history has led us to this moment. So there is a lot in my book that relates to this. I want to take us all the way back, and before we really get too far, I think we have to look at historically all the events that have led up to this. Then I want to take us through a look at just exactly what the Muslim Brotherhood stands for and what our government has said about them and what our government's position is, and then finally close by talking about how all of that is going to play out over the next 9 to 12 months into a world that we just cannot even imagine. So I actually want to take us all the way back to Abraham and back to the Bible, and I'm going to come real quickly through 5 or 6 quick historical events. So for those out there who have read their Bible, they know that Abraham was the father of many nations and that he had 2 sons, and the son that he had by his wife ended up founding Christianity, and the son that he had by his handmaiden ended up founding Islam. And there has been a battle between the two ever since for control, and that led us in, I'm not going to spend much time on it, but that led us into the Crusades, which was essentially a religious war between Islam and Christianity for basically control of the Middle East and of parts of Europe. And so basically, I want to jump forward, though, because it'll have more meaning to some more current events, and I discuss in detail World War I. So that's where I want to pick it up. That's in my book, and because I believe we're having what I call Archduke Ferdinand moment here. He was, for those of you who don't know, he was the Archduke of Austria who was assassinated. But that whole situation had been choreographed for almost 25 years, and I want to relate it to what's happening now in Egypt. So what happened is he was assassinated as the pretext to start World War I. But why? That's the question. The reason is because America had emerged as a major industrial power and it exported our industrial powers to Germany, who was becoming very, very powerful and becoming the economic and industrial power of Europe. And then them, in concert with Russia, were building a transcontinental railway modeled after the U.S. transcontinental railway. And England, who was the superpower at the head of what we call the free trade system, which we're now familiar with by virtue of our trade with China, was in dire jeopardy of losing their stranglehold on trade if they were able to get a transcontinental railway that crossed Europe, crossed these straits over into Alaska and came down through Canada and ultimately down through America and into Central America and to the tip of South America, then the sea power of England and of the free trade system will be broken. So I want to look at the chaos. Chaos was the objective of World War One. Bring a war to Europe and destroy all the nations of Europe. Create absolute chaos, destroy the cooperation between Germany and Russia, destroy the Transcontinental Railroad, destroy the industrial base of Germany, and in so doing, continue the free trade system which had enslaved the world. That's what World War One was all about. And the time we finish this conversation tonight, we'll see that there's some significant parallels between that and what's happening in Egypt right now. But before we get into that, I'll pause and see if either of you have any questions, and if not, I want to jump into some real meat, which is what happened in 1954 in Iran, and then again in 1979 in Iran. So before I get into that, do either of you have any comments or questions?
I just have one comment, and Abraham, I don't think he founded Christianity. It was Judaism.
You're correct. It was Judaism and Christianity branched off, but they've been aligned, and they've been, so you're right. I stand corrected. It was Judaism.
I got that too.
So.
I mean, but I knew what you meant. It's, Jesus came along a long time after Abraham did. So
correct. But the lineage, I guess, I just got ahead of myself. The lineage was that we came from the Old Testament. And then we went into, which was Judaism, and we went into the New Testament with the birth of Christ. So I just left out a step in between.
Abraham really was a prophet if he created Christianity. Yeah, Abraham really was a prophet in that case. If he found it.
They said he was too old to have children. He must have lived a long time.
Let's jump to 1954, because this has a lot of parallels, again, to the power structure in Egypt. We've got Mubarak, who's been in power for 30 years as a dictator, but most Americans don't really understand how we got an Islamic government in Iran, and it really started in 1954 with the government's first political coup, as opposed to a military coup. They created a political coup. They took Kermit Roosevelt, who was a CIA member and who was related to Teddy Roosevelt, and gave him several million dollars and sent him into Iran and said, we want you to destabilize the government. And at that time, they had an elected democratic government. The president was very popular. He was the Time Magazine Man of the year that they started this insurrection. But ultimately, they orchestrated riots in the streets or protests, and they ultimately got him out, and they put the Shah of Iran in. And the Shah of Iran was very similar to Mubarak. He was a U.S. dictator who was put in by the U.S., and he ruled Iran with an iron hand. And then in 1979, having been in power since 1954, the people arose in the street, very similar to what we're seeing now. It was couched as a democratic revolution, and many people who really... We're talking like Mike was talking a minute ago. Hey, it's great these people are standing up for democracy. They're opposing a dictator. Isn't this going to be wonderful? But they really didn't realize that those people, if you look back at all the revolutions that have started in the world, you can go back through the French Revolution. You can go back to the Russian Revolution. The people who are the front people who orchestrate these, who appear to be orchestrating these revolutions, almost never end up in power afterwards. And that's exactly
I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt you, but these Egyptians here in Cairo recently, they were not trying to take power themselves. They just wanted that guy out of there, and they refused to get out of that square until he was out of there. And,
well,
you know, what I was saying
was... It's more complicated than that, Mike.
It's a lot more complicated than that. I know it is. But they stood up for what they believed in, and they did not back down. And, you know, it's like the whole world saw that.
They're fueled by the Muslim Brotherhood, and that's what's behind it.
The question is, who's going to end up in power at the end of the day? And that's why I want to talk about what happened in Iran, because Iran looked at the beginning of that revolution like it was exactly like what you're describing here. It was a bunch of young people. It was a bunch of people who were espousing democracy. It looked like we were going to have a democratic government come in and take the place of a dictator. But what happened instead? Ayatollah Khomeini came to power, and we had a radical Muslim regime that has you know, terrorized those people. And so I think I can demonstrate to you in the course of this conversation that irregardless of the way it looks now, irregardless of what the people in the streets are shouting and what they may even believe in, that's not likely to be the outcome of this revolution at the end.
No, not by all
means.
And
so we need to be smart and understand where this is going and why. So to get to that, Mike, and I'll come back to it, and then you can stop me as many times as you want and challenge me when I get to Egypt. But first, let's look at what happened in Iran. So basically, very quickly, this supposedly youth movement of Democratic-supporting protesters evolved into the seizing of the U.S. Embassy. 53 hostages were taken and held for 444 days, and ultimately, it didn't end up in a democratic revolution. It ended up in the installation of the Ayatollah Khomeini, and it ended up in imposition of Sharia law. And that's exactly what I believe is going to happen when we get to Egypt now. So maybe at that point we can start to talk about Egypt. And just like we basically created a coup in Iran, the history of Egypt is that we had another very wonderful person in power in the form of Anwar Sadat in 1979. And Anwar Sadat was a friend to the United States, and he was a friend to Israel, and he was
brokering. And don't tell me Sadat was not a good guy. You're not going to tell me Anwar Sadat was not a good guy.
Was not a good guy?
I'm going to tell you that
he was. And that's why
he was.
He was championing the Camp David Accords, which was the peace agreement with Israel. And guess what happened? The Muslim Brotherhood stepped in, and the Muslim Brotherhood had him assassinated. And I'll give you some references to prove that. The quote from a lieutenant general, we'll get to that in a minute.
And some of that was due to his relationship with Israel also, because remember, he had two wars against Israel, and we defeated him in each one. Only after that did he make an effort. I remember when he wanted back the Sinai, and Begin was in control, and Begin said, you can have it back, and he bulldozed everything under it. It was pure desert. Well, Sadat got angry. He said, I don't want it back, pure desert. I want the development. Begin said, we built it, we took it down. You wanted the Sinai, I gave it back to you, like I found it, pure desert. So he was not always a good guy. It was only after he found that he could not continue in that manner, it was only then that he turned around and made the peace agreement, which I don't think he wanted to make.
Yeah. Well, he was involved in the Six-Day War, and yes, you're right, that Egypt was against Israel and coalition with the other Arab nations. But, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, we could talk all night if we wanted to talk about all the different nuances, but for whatever reason, he eventually became an advocate of peace, and he tried to broker the Camp David Accords and create peace between Egypt and the Middle East and Israel, and because of that, he was assassinated. And so who came into power? Mubarak. And what did Mubarak do? For the last 30 years, he's maintained basically martial law in that country. He's been a ruthless dictator. He's been able to go in and arrest people and without even telling them what they're being arrested for, put them in prison and torture them. He's been in charge of rendition for the United States. And for those of you who don't know what that is, we don't want to get our hands dirty, and we want to torture somebody in order to get information out of them. One of our favorite places to send them is to Egypt. And his government then tortures those people and sees to it that we get the information that we want. So basically, here's my point, kind of going back. We had a dictator in Iran that was put in by the United States of America, the Shah of Iran, and he imposed, you know, all the things that a dictator imposes on his people. The people rose up in what looked like was going to be a democratic revolution, but ended up in an Islamic revolution. That's what's happening here, because hatred had built up over many, many years of oppression by the Shah and to the people of Iran. That was synonymous with the United States because we were behind that oppressive government. Well, we've been backing Mubarak as well. Almost all of the money that goes for his military comes from the U.S. We give them well over $1 billion a year for their $1 billion a year for their military. Most of their tanks and their planes are all U.S. equipment. And so basically, when those people look at Mubarak, and right now they're against him, deep-seated down in their psyche has to be a hatred of the United States because we imposed this dictator because it was in our best interest.
Larry, there are parallels between what happened in Iran and what's going on in Egypt right now, but the underlying reasons are all different here. Okay, the people, you know, this uprise that happened in Egypt, it wasn't because they wanted a new government. It wasn't because they wanted to overtake the government, throw it over, develop a new one, revolt. It wasn't that. They were just tired of this guy. They were poor. They were working for, you know, practically
it was,
nothing.
Mike, when what was going on in Iran, I was in college, and it was, by the way, my mentor told me the Shah of Iran had an affair with Barbara Walters. I said, oh, my God. He could do better than that.
Know.
But he had been teaching over there at a time. But there are a lot of similarities because the revolution in Iran was an Islamic revolution.
But this wasn't a revolution. This wasn't a revolution. This was a protest. And what I'm looking at right here, I'm looking at news so recent, it has tomorrow's date on it. Where you and I are at right now, all three of us, and most of the people listening, it is still February 11th. I'm looking at a news article dated tomorrow. That's how recent this is, because it's actually the next day.
They're lying to you, Mike. Don't buy all that.
What it says is that the military is in control, protecting the people, by the way. The military is in a position right now where they completely have control over this country.
The
they're protecting the people.
The military is probably the best solution at this point in time for Egypt.
It is.
If there is any hope of stability, it comes from the military, and you're correct in that, Mike.
And what they're doing is they're trying to organize where they can vote and get a new guy in there. It's not going to be the vice president. It's not going to be I can't pronounce this guy's name, but the Mubarak. How do you pronounce that?
Mubarak.
Yeah.
Sure he's
the one that's gone.
But the former president now. The guy
all,
who just stepped
this
down.
Is a lot of
Mubarak.
This is smoke and mirrors.
Mubarak. Mubarak.
Mubarak. A lot of this is smoke and mirrors. So beware
of what's going to happen
after this. I know a lot of this is smoke and mirrors, so beware of what's going to happen after this, because this is very serious stuff. Because I remember in Iran, you had the same jubilation in the streets, the same yelling, the same screaming, the same happiness, and now they stone women to death in the streets. And they talked about the Berlin Wall going down. Hello, that front near destroyed Germany. And I remember the jubilation in the streets over Cambodia, and then Pol Pot took over and had his murder clubs. So beware. They're taking you in a direction.
Here's what you don't understand. There's been a dictatorship in place for 30 years. So because of that, there's not much of any superstructure other than the Mubarak government and the military. And so there's not a host of people out there who can stand up and say, well, I represent this party and this process, and I represent this party and this process.
It's
the most
like
cohesive
it.
Group
it
that
here.
Exists, other than Mubarak's dictatorship, is the Muslim Brotherhood. And so they're very shrewd. They're playing, they're basically tweeting, and they're basically emailing, and they're orchestrating these riots, and they're letting the young people come out for all the reasons that you see. Because they want freedom, because they've been oppressed, because the average Egyptian makes $1 to $2 a day. And because they've been oppressed, they've been tortured. And that's the voice that they want to have out front right now. But once
they see
power, once
the
Mubarak steps down, what's likely to happen is a power vacuum is created. And when that power vacuum is created, the people who are the organizers on the ground, just like we saw Obama get elected by his community organization groups, we have a similar group in Egypt, and it's called the Muslim Brotherhood. They're the ones with the power, with the organization, with the structure
exactly
and the money, in order to assume the vacuum. Once all the hurrah, hurrah is gone, once all the young kids who are used, Adolf Hitler,
That's how Hitler came to power, the very same way.
He reverenced the youth because they
were dumb sheep
that he could control and manipulate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we've got is a reoccurrence of what Hitler did, where they're using the youth, they're using the dissatisfaction, they're using the poverty, but behind the scenes there is a power group positioned to seize control, and that is the Muslim Brotherhood. And it goes even beyond that. Maybe what we should do is skip to kind of another segment of this, and let's talk about some comments that have been made recently by the U.S. in reference to this uprising, and then let's go back
to
talk.
To agree with you about, Larry. The thing you are right about is these Egyptians don't want to hear nothing that Barack Obama has to say. You know that.
beware, Mike, because I'm at Shiva today, and I tweeted it. So if you're following me on Twitter, you can find it. I tweeted it. Baruch Shiva put out an article today, very well documented, Obama as the godfather of the Islamic Revolution. And it gave all of the events leading up to today. They'll be their highly respected journalists worldwide.
Let's look at some hypothetical right now, okay? I mean, you know, I hate to go into hypothetical situations when we have these facts and stuff to talk about in history and what's really going on in the world. But just hypothetically, right quick, what if something like that were to happen here in the United States, where we had to, you know, us the people, we had to go up. It's not going to happen with Obama because a lot of people like him. But say we decide, okay, we're not going to take this government anymore, and we all go to Capitol Hill and, you know, in front of the White House and stuff like that, and we say, we're going to stay here and protest until this president, concedes and gets out of there.
But, Mike,
okay?
what we're saying here is there's an organization behind it.
Okay, maybe.
Let's see what Mike's point is before we give a counterpoint. Go on, Mike.
Thank you, Larry. Okay, now say this something similar like this happened in the United States, and the military took over. What do you think would happen then? That's what scares me. Okay, now the whole world saw what happened.
Glad you went there. You've actually taken me to where I wanted to end this conversation, but I'm going to jump to the end, and we'll come back in and fill in the supporting information afterwards. Then here's where this whole thing kind of gets its cohesiveness. What you really have to look at is the thing that's the common thread throughout my book, which is the free trade system, which is the whole concept of down with capitalism. Capitalism is evil, and we have to impose a new kind of government, and we have to have a one-world government. And so we've got factions that are pulling together to create a one-world government that are absolutely ambiguous. You look at them and you say, my goodness, how can we have these factions coming together? But let me give you some heads up, and I think you'll see that it's kind of the concept of my enemy's enemy is my enemy. And so here's where we're coming from. We have presidents, starting with Bush Sr., all the way up and through Obama, saying that we need to move to a new world order. We have George Soros saying we have to move to a new world order.
And that's chapter six of your book, sir. That's your book, chapter six, is where the New World Order.
But there are other books. Jim Blocky has a book out,
have,
too.
We have the UN saying we have to have a New World Order. And I have quotes in my book where we've got quotes from Gorbachev saying that the only way forward in this world today is creation of a New World Order. And the whole concept of what we have now in the free trade with China, that is the central thing that is breaking the United States of America, is a cooperation with China to create the old world free trade system in order to break the back of capitalism. And so I have quotes in the book that reference the merger of a in the formation coming out of this new world order of a super capitalist communist society. So we have factions that are democratic, the U.S., that are socialist, represent socialism, that represent communism, and that represent Islam, all coming together, all with their own individual agendas, because they want to bring down, first and foremost, capitalism. Then they'll sort out the dust afterwards and see where the power resides. But right now, you've got factions that have ideological differences that are cooperating because the big agenda is to bring about the one world government. And Egypt plays into that, because what's going to happen here is if you go back again to Iran, I want to basically, you know, give you some more history. When they seized the embassy and took the 53 American hostages and held them for 444 days, and then we had the failed attempt to rescue them, do you know what happened right after that?
Yeah, Reagan got inaugurated, and they let those hostages go right quick because Jimmy Carter was a pussy. As soon as Ronald Reagan got in office, they let them go.
That's not the point, Mike. The point is what happened politically in Iran when all of that was going on. Let's see, I may have lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. Basically, gosh, I think I did lose my train of thought. So.
Well, in Chapter 6, the New World Order.
Well, I don't
know what's going on in Iran.
No, we're not
the underlying effects.
We're in a totally different location. So basically, gosh, what was I trying to say? I had a very important
point. You're talking
about
Iran and the underlying reasons that I forgot. Now, don't pause too long. I'm gonna have to edit this shit if we do.
Well, I'm trying to think of the point I was trying to make. So basically, the Iran fell, and it became an Islamic government. We've got the same thing happening right now. I can't retrieve that point. I just have no idea where I was going with it. So we'll have to kind of go.
I'm going to nominate you for Director of Intelligence. He had no idea what was going on.
Well, I don't really believe that that's the case. But anyway, let's go back to this whole coalition. So you've got this coalition of people, and what they're really pushing for is they're pushing for a one-world government. That's the big issue that you've got to look at, Mike. And you've got people who are just being puppets, like I talked about in my book, Puppet Masters. You've got the people who want the one-world government. They're the ones who are pulling the strings. And they'll pull the strings of the communists if they need to, and of the socialists, and of the Democrats, and of the Republicans, and of the Islamics, and of the Muslims, and
ever,
of everybody,
ever,
in order to bring their one-world government into power.
Don't ever underestimate Islam, because they are breeding themselves into existence and breeding us out of existence. When I was in college, and I was my mentor gave me some students to tutor, and they were two Egyptian students. I was tutoring them in military strategy. I mean, they were so stupid. And believe me, at that time, they wanted Israel off the face of the map. Back in the 70s, when I was in college, they wanted Israel off the face of the map because they made a joke. Says, hey, do you know what Jews and bread have in common? They both belong in the oven. I just turned around and walked out. I said, Reuben, I will not tutor them. I don't need the money that bad. And he was from Argentina. He said, okay, I will flunk them. And, you know, if they didn't pay attention. And I'm sure they failed because they had plenty of money. They were Egyptians, and their goal was to drive Israel out of existence. This has been a theme. This is never going to go away with Egypt, says a theme.
Here, let me give you a couple of quotes, Mike, to let you understand how dangerous the situation in Egypt is. If, in fact, I'm correct, and the Muslim Brotherhood is just waiting behind the scenes to seize power after Mubarak is taken out and a political vacuum occurs. I want to quote Muhammad Badi. He's the supreme guide of the Muslim Brotherhood. And this is a quote from September the 10th, so it's very recent. It was a long quote, so I'm going to just read you portions of it. He says, the only way to create a new generation of Muslims is through jihad. And as you know, jihad means that they would then impose Sharia law. And he goes on to say, we have to love death as much as our enemies love life. So this is the man who is the supreme head of the Muslim Brotherhood, and he's espousing violence. And I want to give you another quote here. This is a spiritual leader. On this one, I had to basically go to television because this wasn't in my book. This is a Muslim leader of the Christian Brotherhood, and this was from Fox News Today on actually the Glenn Beck Show. And so this basically religious leader is saying, I will shoot Allah's enemies, the Jews. And then he goes on to say, I'm basically jumping because it was a very long quote. He says, the last punishment of Jews was carried out by Hitler. He managed to put them in their place. This was divine punishment for them. Allah willing, the next time will be at the hands of the believers. So when you've got people behind the scenes in the biggest political subset in Egypt espousing that kind of a violence and that kind of a destruction of the Jews, you've got problems. And now I want to go back to something you were saying. You were talking about
let's talk about what jihad actually is, since you, I forget how you put it, but jihad is not actually to convert other people to
you
Islam.
You have to realize, first, Mike, you have to realize what Islam means in Arabic. It means to submit. It means to surrender. And
jihad
Islam
means
believes,
that?
Islam. Just let me tell a little bit about Islam. Islam means to surrender, to submit.
Because
what that means, is they believe everybody was born Muslim. That Abraham was a Muslim. That's what they're saying. That everybody was born as a Muslim, and it is through societal conditioning that you turn to other religions. So their goal is to convert. They don't say they convert. They say they revert.
There may be Muslims who believe that. Jihad might believe that, but it is not their mission to convert people to Muslims.
Yes, it is. It is
and,
their mission. Yes, it
and
is. It is
what
their
Larry
mission
just said is that jihad, you know, that's to convert people to Shia law and stuff like that.
The Muslims' mission is to convert the world to Islam. You must submit. That means submit, surrender. You must submit. You were born Muslim at birth. Everybody they consider was born Muslim at birth. You're born Muslim at birth, and you must revert to that. If you do not revert to that, and you do not follow Muhammad, which is ahead of Christ, that Christ came to say Muhammad is going to come after me. That's what they teach, and that at the end, then you're going to have the jihad, Ahmadinejad is preparing for it. You know, you put a bomb here and a bomb here, and everything goes up in fire. And then their prophet comes through with a sword in each hand through bands of fire, and all infidels will die. If you are not Muslim, you have not submitted, you have not surrendered to the role of Islam, to the role of Allah as defined by Muhammad, and you are going to die. They believe you should die. Mike, they're taking you down the garden path here.
Do you know exactly what an infidel is?
Well, they consider an
infidel. It's anyone who's not of the Islamic faith. Let me bring you back. I want to give you a quote again. Another quote.
It's somebody who goes against Islamic faith, but it's basically somebody who's already Islamic. It doesn't really apply to us.
No. It's everybody.
When we went into Iraq and we were trying to control them, yes, we are considered infidel for that. But
we're all
infidels
for them, Mike.
No, infidel is anyone who doesn't believe in Allah. Anyone who doesn't believe in Allah. The big word here, the overbridging word for all this conversation is caliphate. And what a caliphate is, is the imposition of... So let's go back. Jihad is a holy war. And they want to basically create that. And then what do they want to do? They want to bring Sharia law in, which is where you've got the burqas and you can cut women's heads off, and if a woman is raped, she has to have three males to attest to it, or she's ostracized or stoned. I mean, we don't want to live under that. But what they're trying to create now is a caliphate, which is a reemergence of a global Islamic world, and it works two ways. If you're conquered, they basically are going to go out and spread this caliphate through all of the Middle East. And it's probably going to spread into Europe. So now let's say you're in Europe and you're a non-Muslim. If you don't convert, here's what happens. You're allowed to live. You're not killed, but you're placed under Sharia law, so now you have to live under a law that is very, very different than, say, what you were living under if you were in France or Germany or Italy or Spain or England, and you're basically suppressed. You're taxed into submission, and you have very, very limited civil liberties. That's what's going to befall the rest of the world if this thing spreads. So let's stop for a second, and I want to read you a quote. This is from Hamas.
Hang on to
that
quote, because I know you're looking at something, so you won't lose your train of thought this time. And this might be a very unpopular opinion, or at least a very unpopular thing to say in present company, but jihad is basically they want us to stop messing with them. They don't see it as they're coming after us. They just want us to get out of Iraq. They want us to leave them alone.
No, Mike, they're taking you down the gravity path.
Stop. Let me read you this quote, and then let's see if you have the nerve to come back and say that again. This is Hamas' covenant. This is from the Quran, and it says, "The day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight the Jews, killing the Jew, when the Jew will hide behind stone and trees, and the stones and trees will say, 'O Muslims, O Abdul, there is a Jew behind me, come and kill him.'" Now,
is that
a message of peace, or is that a message of hatred? Is that a message of submission, or is that a message of caliphate that says, "We will conquer you"?
Where exactly is that quote from?
It's in the Quran.
That is from the Quran, and it is the Hamas's covenant from the Quran. And that is what the Muslim Brotherhood believes, and that is what Islam is all about, is conquering the world and creating a caliphate in which they put Sharia law in position over the entire world, Mike. That's what this is about. Now, let me spell out what's going to happen. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to destabilize the Middle East. And here's what you need to know from a historic viewpoint and a geographical viewpoint. You've got Egypt. Well, what's right next to Egypt? Israel. Israel sitting there in a very precarious position right now. Well, what's below Egypt? Saudi Arabia. So let's go back to 1954, and let's go back to that coup, and then let's move forward to 1973, and we had an oil embargo. And when we had that oil embargo, the United States basically came to its knees because the valve of oil was shut off. So what did we do? We went to Saudi Arabia, and we brokered an oil deal with Saudi Arabia that said, "We'll help you modernize, we'll give you military protection, and in return, you'll give us all the oil that we need at a price that we agree to, and if we ever have a shortage, you'll supply it to us." So Saudi Arabia is sitting there right under Egypt. If it falls and becomes radicalized like Iran, now you've got the vast majority of the Middle East population resides in those two countries. You have a very, very likely, very probable likelihood that Saudi Arabia is gonna be infiltrated and is gonna go radical as well. Right there,
Saudi Arabia is very concerned at the time.
Yes, you've got the Suez Canal. So Saudi Arabia's sitting there, and they're probably just about as scared as the Jews are right now. And we should be scared because they can cut off that supply of our oil through the Suez Canal, and if they do, then we're in trouble. The next thing that you need to realize is where does Israel get most of their oil from? Egypt. Pardon me?
But that's what they keep hanging over our heads is the price of oil and the oil crisis and all this stuff.
It's not all over oil, though.
But that's what they keep hanging over our heads.
This started 2 years.
In the media, because as soon as this uprising started in Egypt, the first thing they said is gas prices are going to go up.
No, Mike. The Obama administration has been moving forward on a program to get rid of Mubarak for 2 years, and this came from senior White House correspondent Jake Tapper. Okay, for 2 years. And what they did was the Bush administration, they tried to directly fund civil society in Europe and pro-democracy groups. What happened when Obama went in 2 years ago? He cut that funding and sent it out into other civil societies, into other Muslim groups. This is a process he's been working on for 2 years. When Jake Tapper comes out and writes an article about it, you know, Obama, they sliced the funding 70%. from 45 million to 7 million. Meanwhile, money that was to be given directly to civil society groups was eliminated, and the Obama administration agreed to once again fund only those institutions that had Mubarak's seal of approval because they knew that would foment revolution. This is a two-year process with Obama. He started it as soon as he went into office. Remember June 4th last year, 2010, when he spoke to the Arab Society? He said, the United States will never go to war against Islam. You remember when he said that? Now they're calling him the godfather of the Islamic Revolution. And it was 2 weeks ago he said the Muslim Brotherhood had his support.
Obama's not always going to be president of the United States. Even if he gets elected another term, we got 6 years to go. He's not always going to be president of the United States. And he can do some damage while he is in there, but we still got Congress, we still got Senate, and we still got the people.
You're failing to see just how dangerous this situation is.
It's very dangerous. I am not underestimating anything here. Believe me, I'm not.
Let me give you a story, and then let's see what you have to say when I finish the story. The Bible has over 300 prophecies in it, and I'm a very strong Christian, and I can tell you that I have yet to find one of those prophecies that hasn't come true. And in the Bible, it talks about a World War III that is a precursor to the Antichrist and to, you know, the tribulation. So how might that World War III come about? That's what I was really getting at a second ago. So let me finish that so that you can see how this wildfire that's starting in Egypt is going to spread around the entire world and is going to lead to the one world government. We'll never see another election in the United States of America if Egypt falls to a radical Islamic regime. You've got the probability that Saudi Arabia is going to fall. The oil to the United States will be cut off. The Suez Canal oil will be interrupted at least for a period of time. Egypt is the primary supplier of oil to Israel, so Israel's oil supply is going to be cut. Israel is squeezed now between an increasingly radicalized Middle East, and you're going to see a fire sweep through the Middle East I know the point I was trying to make before. What happened back when Iran fell was immediately, as soon as it fell, you had Islam people, the Brotherhood, coming out and saying, Allah has blessed us. He has shown us that He is with us because we have been able to take Iran and convert it to Sharia law. And so what happened is the number of people that joined radical groups spiked to an all-time high immediately following that. What's going to happen again? You've got to look at history repeating itself. If Egypt radicalizes, I can tell you that it is going to lead to the same situation where the radicals are going to be have a sense of empowerment in all the nations surrounding Egypt, and they're going to say, Allah is with us. Egypt has fallen. It's in the hands of Islam, and it's going to sweep across the entire Middle East, and then it's going to go over. They're having a protest tomorrow in Algeria, and Algeria is right across from Spain and the Gibraltar Strait. So now if we get it spreading that far, not only is the Suez Canal going to be shut down, but the Strait of Gibraltar is going to be shut down, and then you have no access to get oil out of the Middle East. And if you look back and you try to look at what Obama's been doing, as Dolly was saying, he is, in my opinion, first and foremost a Muslim. If we look at the crisis of what happened in the Gulf, he did everything he could to, as his cronies in his administration say, you never want to fail to take advantage of a crisis. So what did he do? He made sure that the oil rigs were pulled out of the Gulf. He made sure that our ability to produce oil was significantly retarded. And I believe that was all in preparation for the orchestration of the event that we're seeing right now. And I believe that we're going to see this thing sweep through all of the Middle East. And here's where it comes now. When we get the biblical, it talks about World War III.
We got about 3 minutes left.
We've got a wrap, I extended the
show. Dolly, I know you like to go to work at 7 o'clock where you're at, and if you don't want to stick around, that's fine, but you're welcome to. But I extended the show for another hour. And if Larry Bauer wants to continue, that's great. No, I'll be here.
Former senior advisor, I got to say, David Axelrod. You know, David Axelrod came out and said the president has been confronting Mubarak since he's been in office. He made a direct call for him to leave on January the 28th after President Mubarak announced he was dissolving his cabinet. So you see, this Obama's been planning this for 2 years and cutting off funding. And here is another one. Mubarak and Obama cut funds for civil society in Egypt and counterterrorism. Former White House official, until recently, Obama administration put Egypt's pro-democracy movement at arm's length. January 28th. Was when he came down and told him he had to leave. But for 2 years, David Axelrod has said that he has been privately promoting this. This is not a new thing. Obama knew what he wanted to do, and he wanted Mubarak out of there and the Muslim Brotherhood in.
Yep. And you've got the O'Reilly interview that occurred before the Super Bowl that 19 million people saw, and O'Reilly asked Obama specifically a question about the Brotherhood, and Obama, what he was looking for was, well, O'Reilly was hoping he was going to come back and condemn the Muslim Brotherhood and say they had no role to play in a democratic Egypt. And instead he came back and said he would welcome, from his viewpoint, he would welcome the participation by all political groups. And so then you've got his administration coming out and parroting what he's wanting them to say. So we've got the Director of Intelligence coming out just very recently, and he's saying that they're a malign organization. The Muslim Brotherhood, as we see it in Egypt, is not radical. We have nothing to fear from them. But then I want to take you to a quote here from a general who was on the ground in Iran, when Iran fell, and is now coming out and saying, don't listen to the Director of Intelligence, don't listen to Obama. He's saying that there are very, very dangerous people, that we have to look at this as in all likelihood resulting in World War III and resulting in the Muslim Brotherhood coming to power. I'm quoting now Lieutenant General William Boykin. And he says the revolution was treated as a democratic revolution, but was ultimately an Islamic revolution. And there he's talking about the revolution in Iran. So basically he's saying what I was saying before. What looked like a democratic revolution, which is what we see in Egypt now, ultimately turned into an Islamic revolution. And then he goes on and says, quote,
how does Islam fit into this?
Pardon me?
I'm just trying to figure out how the Muslims are fitting into this. It just doesn't make sense to me. And if this plan was all orchestrated by Obama, it's backfired on him because they don't want to hear shit he has to say either.
No.
Here, listen to this quote, Mike. Listen to this quote. So this is
I'm
the
hearing the
talk.
Quotes, but they're not tying into what's going on. I mean, you're jumping
yes,
from a democratic or, protest, a protest
that
to,
was not
to
a
get
democratic
this guy
protest.
Out of there.
It was mob
and
rule.
You're trying to say that it's a Muslim backing that orchestrated this, and Obama's
the head
of it. Let me
read this quote, then come back and comment. This is now the man who was on the ground when we had the fall of Iran. And now he's basically retired, and here's what he's saying. He's saying, we will see an Islamic Republic with Sharia law in Egypt. The Muslim Brotherhood was established to create global Sharia law, period. This is a very, very informed general in the United States of America who is a loyalist, and he is basically countermanding everything that the Obama administration is saying, and everything that you said thus far in this show when you've been defending them, he's saying we will see Sharia law. This is a caliphate, and we will see not a democratic revolution, but we will see an Islamic government come out of this protest in Egypt. And then I want to go back and tell you how it relates to the United States of America. Basically, there was, I didn't catch the lady's name, but there was a woman who went over to Egypt that was on Fox News today, and she was participating in this democratic revolution in Egypt. And she went back and she was on the press in England, and she said, now what we need to do is we need to bring that same sense here to England, and we need to revolt here in England, and we need to get rid of our government. And it's going to spread as we get more unemployment, more destabilization, as the oil valves are cut off, and the United States goes into absolute economic collapse because of the situation that comes out of the Middle East, where we can't get oil out of Iraq, and we can't get oil out of Saudi Arabia, we can't get oil through the Suez Canal,
that's going to be our own damn fault if that happens. It's going to be our own fault for relying on them. And what's going on in the Middle East, it's not about oil or anything. It's all about Bethlehem and Baghdad and all these
holy
wars.
It's about the one world government, Mike. It's about the one world government. It's about establishing the one world government.
You're buying into media reports. You need
I'm not
it.
Buying media
you
reports.
Know, I know
I'm buying
military,
everything that I've learned
I know military
in my
men,
lifetime.
I know military
Common
men right
is what
now.
I'm looking at.
Military
okay,
men.
I mean,
listen, military men that have just retired. High-placed military men, I know them. You know what they're doing? They left the military. They're building forts in the mountains in the United States waiting for this to happen. Now.
That's what I was saying about my hypothetical hypothetical situation there. If we ever had to do this, you know, if the people of the United States ever had to go up to the White House and protest like that, would our military try to protect us, or would they try to throw us in, what do you
no,
call those things they're building, detainment
into,
camps or something like that?
You see, we're sending our military abroad, and we'll bring UN troops in here, and UN troops have no allegiance to the citizens of the United States.
Right.
So
well,
therefore,
why didn't UN troops go into Egypt? Egypt's part of the UN. Why didn't UN troops go in there?
That's the question everybody's been asking. Where was the UN? This is mob rule. Where was the
they
UN?
Because they didn't overthrow the government. They just wanted that guy out of there.
This revolution is...
It wasn't a revolution. They did not overthrow the government. They just wanted the president out of there.
Well,
they wanted somebody new in there.
They wanted to overthrow the government.
When the president goes, Mike... There's no structure for keeping the power on, keeping the water on, keeping people able to go to work.
The best thing that can happen is
if
the military is able to take
control. So what this is all about is creating chaos, starting in the Middle East, spreading to Europe, and then shutting off the oil valve to the United States, which creates chaos here. And chaos is basically, here's what they want to happen. They want to have all these countries around the world in financial chaos and social chaos and political chaos, and then they step up with the aid of the UN, which now comes to the foreground, and they say, oh, capitalism has failed. The whole system is awry. We have to have a new system. Gee, we have to have the one world government. That's really what you're missing, Mike. You're down in the minutiae, and you need to be looking at the 50,000-foot view above the forest from a satellite, where you can see that the ultimate goal here is to create pandemonium and chaos around the world in order to usher in the one world government.
Larry, I have a great question for you, sir. I have
okay,
a great question
go.
For you. If you were the people in Egypt, how would you have handled this?
Mike, they've got an organization.
Well, I think I answered
the people
of Egypt
two didn't answers. Just do this.
Yeah, basically, I think the first thing I have to say to you, Mike, is they've been repressed for 30 years. They didn't just coincidentally happen right now during this period of time to step up and revolt. They used the Internet, they used Twitter, they used Facebook, they used social networking. And who was behind all of that? In my opinion, it was the Muslim Brotherhood. So it looks like it's a popular revolt, but it's actually a revolt that has been orchestrated very carefully behind the scenes by very, very powerful groups that want to have the one world government and groups that want to have the Muslim Brotherhood take over and create jihad. So that's
sir,
happened.
You're basing that on speculism, and that's your opinion, and that is fine. But my opinion is I think it's great that the people took back their country, and I praise them for it.
But there is documentation on this. David Axelrod was documenting what Obama was doing. You know, his senior White House correspondent was documenting what he was doing. There is documentation. Obama himself said, United States will never go to war against Islam. Obama himself said that. You know, I mean, this is not speculation.
And it's also
Some
got historical precedence. And it's also got reams and reams of quotes, hate quotes, from the Muslim Brotherhood, who happen to be, other than Mubarak, the most powerful political group in Egypt, and therefore the group that is most likely to take control. I understand what you're saying, Mike, when you say that you praise these people for standing up against the tyrant, and I think that's great, but I think that you're not seeing the big picture. They're being used. They're just puppets that are being used, and we'll see maybe a month or 2 months or 3 months, and then we'll see the power play, and we'll see the Muslim Brotherhood step in, and we'll see Egypt be radicalized. I would love to have seen
if the people of Egypt stood up against this government, they can stand up against
Here's the way I would have liked to have seen it done. I would have liked to have seen the people come and the people protest for peace, but then I would have liked to have seen the military get involved, and I would like to have seen a very, very long-term movement towards moving this government, supported by the United States of America, not Obama coming in and pushing Mubarak out. But I would have liked to have seen the United States of America come
they
in and say...
They don't want us in there, sir. They don't want it. They want their own government.
Yes, but you asked me the question, and I'm going to answer it for you. What would lead to stability would be to have a transition where we had several months where the military had primary control, and where other political groups other than the Muslim Brotherhood had an opportunity to organize and to present to the Egyptian people alternative government other than just what's likely to come out now, which is the Muslim Brotherhood. What we see when these revolts, the French Revolution, the Russian Revolution, the revolution in Iran, when they happen very quickly, like what's happening now, is the people who forefront in the beginning, who look like the nice guys, the democratic people, the people standing up for their rights, they're not the power behind it. And so then the power brokers who stay in the background during the initial phases of the revolution because they know they would not be popularized, come in and seize power after the fact. So what looks like a good guy revolution for democratic purposes, for all the right reasons, is going to get derailed if the United States of America and the UN and somebody with power doesn't come in and force a transition into a government
that can give
the people what they want.
That's exactly what those people were protesting against. They don't want somebody coming in there and telling them how to do it. What they're trying to do right now, okay, you know, things can change over there by the second, you know, with what's going on over there, and things can change. But what they're trying to do is get a democratic election going and get somebody in there. Now, if they vote for a Muslim, that's their business. That's all I can say about
that. Okay, let me ask you a question, Mike. Let me ask you a question. Other than the Muslim Brotherhood, which has got a very powerful political base and has the same kind of an organizational structure on the ground that put Obama into power, name a political group that can fill the political vacuum in Egypt right now.
They just want somebody to represent them. They want a president
Last night on Fox, they had a Muslim woman on there, very articulate, and then they had Combs, that I think is a effing moron, and she spoke to him, and this Muslim woman, and she said, "Are you really that stupid? Do you not understand what the Quran says? You will all submit." She said, "I'm telling you, they want Sharia law globally." And he said, "Well, they've been doing it peacefully." She said, "It doesn't matter if they get to power peacefully. That doesn't matter. Once they get into power, then you will have Sharia law over everyone." And she was a Muslim, and she feared it. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, Gazelle fears Sharia law. You know, I mean, this was a Muslim, and Combs was just stuttering, Chris, you know, I think he's one can't try to six-pack anyway. But this was a Muslim
To support that, the quote I gave earlier from the spiritual leader of the Muslim Brotherhood, "I will shoot Allah's enemies, the Jews." You know, so basically, Mike, I go back and say there's a very, very dangerous faction brewing under the scenes, under the radar, that's going to hijack this revolution. And so I contend, I go back to you, and I say, prove me wrong, name a political group other than the Muslim Brotherhood who is positioned to fill this vacuum if all of a sudden Mubarak is gone.
Well, the United States, sir, is capable of doing that. But they don't want the United States in there. I don't think they want the Muslim Brotherhood.
No, I'm talking about within Egypt.
You can't do it.
I know we're talking about Egypt. Yes, we could go in there, and we could say, okay, you guys don't have a government, so we're going to do the brotherly neighborhood thing and go in there and set up a government for you. They don't want that. They want to elect their own representatives.
I know that, Mike. I'm saying, you said that the United States...
Let me say one thing here. When I worked for my former boss, and he was telling me about something he did, and I remember I was in college, and they had taken, they saw this Chinese junk that was, and it was all full of, Russian weapons. He was the one responsible for it. He said, what we did was take a Chinese junk, fill it full of Russian weapons. He said, take a picture of it, and then we sunk it so nobody could see it again. So... you got to look behind. You got to look behind and look at the power brokers behind. You got to look at the groups that want chaos in Egypt. You got to see why they want chaos, and you got to look behind the people standing in the square, because the people standing in the square don't really have a voice. They're screaming for Mubarak to go. But who was organizing that event for Mubarak to go? You got to look behind the scenes, and you got to see. I can remember. I read about this too. The from North Vietnam, and they were coming south, you know, and that was my boss's program. And
Mary,
he said the program was so successful.
Somebody's breathing into the phone. I thought it was you.
I've got a sinus infection.
He said the program was so successful that what they did, he said he offered them so much money, so much land, and so much buffalo. It was so successful, people were migrating back and forth 2 or 3 times. But all you saw on TV was a migrating horde from North Vietnam to South Vietnam. That's all you saw. So you got to look behind the scenes and say, wait a minute, is there a puppet master back here pulling the strings? Because there's going to be. Nothing is as it looks on the surface. Nothing is as it looks. So you see these people in the squares, but nothing is as it looks.
Yeah,
Mike, I
want
to go back. It's just like on an interview on television where the interviewer asks a question that somebody doesn't want to answer, and they ask it again and again and again. So I'm going to do that to you right now because I really want to drive a point home. If the Muslim Brotherhood doesn't step to power, if we drive Mubarak out immediately and we have an immediate transition, you've got to have water and power, and you've got to run this government immediately. Other than the Muslim Brotherhood, tell me who in Egypt is organized enough to step in and provide an interim government in order to keep Egypt from falling into absolute chaos. Who other than the Muslim Brotherhood can do that? Name a group.
Who other than the Muslim group
Muslim
in Egypt? Okay, because the way I heard the question was, you know, who could go in there and fix things? And I said, yes, the United States could, but they don't want us to do that. And
It has nothing to do with the United States, Mike. You want the
it
United
doesn't,
States
but
out
you
of
asked
it,
who
United
else
States
could.
Thinking, who within Egypt could? What other political
factor
other than the
is,
Muslim Brotherhood is in a position to fill the political void when it occurs, if it occurs immediately?
You're looking at who had the motive to initiate this activity.
No,
We want to look at another political group. What other political group is there in Egypt that's capable of?
You got to listen to me carefully. I'm asking you.
I heard you.
Question.
I don't know.
Who
I don't know, Larry. I don't know what other group.
Who has the means to step in and provide a transitional government that will keep the water on and the electric flowing and the country from falling into absolute chaos? Who is big enough politically and organized enough to do that other than the Muslim Brotherhood? Name a group. Is there something like the Republicans or the Democrats or whatever that exists there besides the Muslim Brotherhood that could step in and do that?
Well first of all,
it's a yes or no question.
The government, I don't know. I don't know. I can't say yes or no because I don't know.
From every political commentator, from the general that I quoted earlier tonight, they all say that if this government, Mubarak government falls now, that there is no organization or entity in Egypt itself, the Muslim Brotherhood, that is well enough organized, well enough funded, and would be able to step in and fill the void and keep the lights going and keep the power on and keep chaos from occurring.
The
so therefore, I go back to my original
contention
and
say, all they have to do is go to work.
Let me finish. When you go into chaos, what happens is you go to whoever can get you through the moment, and that is going to be the Muslim Brotherhood, unless there is some other group capable of filling that void. And I cannot name one, you could not name one, and nobody that I've heard on the television or any political commentator or any government or any military leader has been able to come up with a name other than the Muslim Brotherhood who would be able to step in and fill the void if a Mubarak government falls.
Well, you
that's
know, this might be a great opportunity for them, but that still doesn't mean that they incited this and this was orchestrated by them. This was just a simple act of anarchy. The people were tired of it, and the people can run their own government.
It's not
the people, also
anarchy.
People.
There's more to it.
I'm sorry, Dolly, what?
It's not a simple act of anarchy, Mike. This was well orchestrated. I mean, Obama's been orchestrating it for 2 years. For God's sake, David Axelrod said so. This was not a simple act of anarchy.
But what I'm saying is, without a president, okay, people are capable of running in their own country. Okay, they can keep the lights on, they can keep the water flowing, they can keep everything as it is, just by simply going to work. That's all they have to do is go to work and keep things going. They don't need this guy in there. They didn't want this guy in there. And I'll agree with you. They didn't think things all the way through before they went to the square in Cairo. I forget exactly what it's called, but that square they were around, the presidential square is what they call it. They didn't think things all the way through, but they knew they wanted that guy out of there. And those people are confident enough. Those people are confident enough.
I've been more wrong. When a government falls, there are so many things that a government controls that it's not funny. You don't have any fire because guess what? They're not getting paid. The firemen aren't getting paid. The policemen aren't getting paid. All kinds of
Larry, excuse me, sir. You can't put out a fire
it's
by yourself. You can't find you and five neighbors to go put out a fire if you see one. You need a fire department.
What are you going to do with a bucket?
You see what I mean?
It's not just the president, Mike. It's every member of his government is now invalid. Every part of that government is now invalid.
He tried to invalidate them, so he didn't have to step down. That was where his incredibility came out.
But the government here was gone. What would happen to the electrical system? They're going to handle it.
People would go
to
work and keep it running. If there was a fire down the street, people would go put it out. If there was somebody robbing a house, the neighbors would stop them.
No, it's not
that simple. That's what anarchy is. You don't need a leader. You don't need a leader. There are no leaders in anarchy.
There's not a political revolt in the history of the world that has ever followed the path that you're saying. Society breaks down, riots occur, marauderie occurs, there's no social stability, people go out and kill people and rob, and there's no money. Remember, because the money is issued by the government, so people might as well not go to work because they're not going to get paid, no bills are going to get paid, the electricity is eventually going to stop flowing, and basically the society falls into chaos because the distribution network fails because people aren't getting paid, there's no food, starvation sets in, and when starvation sets in, people get desperate, and then they will bring anybody into power who can restore order, and that is most likely going to be the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, it's not as simple. You know, it really isn't, Mike. I know you think it is, but anarchy, quite frankly, just doesn't work. And it just isn't that simple. What would happen to the prison system? That's run by the government.
Yeah, that's something else that doesn't work. But what else can you do? You got to remove the people from society. And the only thing I can say about that is I don't believe in capital punishment because once you remove somebody from society, they're not nobody else is in imminent danger because of them because they are incarcerated. So no, I don't believe in capital punishment. The prison system in America or any other country doesn't really work. It doesn't really reform people. It just makes them worse in most cases.
But what else are
you supposed to do? You have to get them out of society where they're not a danger to anybody else.
But these correctional officers aren't going to go to work, they're not going to get paid. The government controls the prisons. Look at the government controls the nursing homes. These people aren't going to get paid. I know I worked in healthcare management. You know, they're not going to get paid. This is the government payroll, exactly what it amounts to. They're not going to get paid. You're not going to have medicines. You're not going to have, because they're being paid for by the government, it's not going to get paid. These guards
but
are not going to go to
do
work.
You really, do you really need to get paid to do your part, to do your job, if you know it's your
but
responsibility?
Mike, how are you going
are
to
you going
that?
To not do it because you're not getting paid?
Let's just take it to the simplest.
Is your landlord going to let you live for free if you don't pay, if you don't pick your check and pay them? Is your landlord going to let you live for free? Is the grocery store going to give you groceries for free if you don't have any money? It doesn't make
let's
any sense. And who's going to feed these people in a nursing home? Who's going to feed these prisoners? The government feeds them. Are you going to? They want you to think like you're thinking, Mike. And I hope that you all look behind things.
They are not responsible for my thinking. I think like this because
this
is how I think. Okay, yeah, they're
Mike, let me take
sure.
your question to the most basic element. You say people will get up and go to work, right? Whether they get paid or not. Is that your contention?
I think that people would, if it came to that, where there was no organized form of government for any, however, whatever period of time, whether it was a day or a week or a month or even indefinite, I think people would still get up and go to work just to keep their society running and do their part. I really believe that.
Let's say you are theoretically right. Now I want to give you the real world of that, and then I'd like to give you the opportunity to comment back. Now remember, the money is gone. The monetary system has collapsed. Nobody's getting paid. So now we've got Chevron, we've got Mobil, we've got whatever oil companies. Are they just going to keep the oil flowing and give that oil away at free? So if the society runs on oil. So if there's no oil, people can't go to the gas station and they can't get gas, and therefore they can't drive to work. If there's no oil, trucks can't deliver food, therefore there's no food. If there's no oil, people can't go to the electric plant and run the electric plant, and so there's no electricity, and chaos sets in, and then the people get desperate, and that's how a democratically organized revolt falls into chaos, and a group like the Muslim Brotherhood could step in. So how are these people going to get to work? How's the food going to get distributed? How is all of this going to happen when there's no money? Nobody's paying for the gas. Nobody's paying for the electricity. Those companies are just magnanimously going to continue to supply electricity and continue to supply gas and continue to supply food when they're not getting paid for it. Is that your contention?
You know, if you live in Houston, if you live in the world,
let me answer the question, Dolly. Is that your contention that those companies are that magnanimous that they're going to keep those pipelines open and that food flowing and those being rendered when they're not receiving one solitary penny? Is corporate America, our corporate world, that magnanimous that they're going to do that?
Well, you see, you're looking at the world. Like, if this were what you're saying, if that happened in the United States, no, I seriously doubt that a lot of the countries in the Middle East would send us fuel, but I think others would. Okay.
How are they
going to
send
also,
it to you if you're not paying them?
I also have to think back to what we did before we had motor, petroleum burning fuel products and stuff like that, before we had electricity,
mm-hmm.
before we had the internet. People got by somehow. They pissed an outhouse.
You want to know how?
And they grew their own food, and they traded chickens
yeah.
for hens, but they survived.
I live three floors
okay,
up in a managed community with skylight.
You're talking about a period of time in which we had 1% of the population living in cities and 99% of the population lived in rural America, and people did have farms and people did grow their own crops and the people canned. And what's happened is part of this whole long process of decades and decades and generations of trying to create this one world government, as we've been pulled into cities. And as we're pulled into cities, we become increasingly more dependent on the corporations and on the government. And they are not going to give you food
that's,
for free.
That's,
and
that's
so
our
if,
own
if
fault right
like
there is relying on the government. I agree with you there.
Pardon me?
Well, I live three floors up with a beautiful place with skylights in a managed community. How am I going to grow my own food?
You go where the food is.
But what Larry is telling you is if there's no fuel, the food isn't going to get there. And where is
my
food?
I'm a real student of history. Let me take you back to the Russian Revolution. Here's what happened in the Russian Revolution. You had the people who lived in the city. And they were, by and large, your nobles, your people with a lot of money living in big mansions with beautiful furniture, with grand pianos, et cetera, et cetera. And then you had your peasants living out on the farms. Here's what happened during the Russian Revolution, which turned radical, by the way, just like I'm saying here. The people who lived in the cities in those big mansions were chopping up their chairs and their tables and their grand pianos and burning them in the fireplace to keep warm, and they were starving to death. And the people who survived were the peasants who lived on the farm in rural America and were able to grow their own food and go out and chop some trees down and sustain themselves. But with probably 98 or 99% of America living in big cities, depending on oil to get back and forth to their jobs, we are not a society, nor is Egypt a society, that can sustain itself in these modern times without oil. You cut off the flow of oil, you choke society, we go back to the Stone Ages, people begin to starve, and the whole civility of society breaks down into chaos, and whoever seems that they, no matter how bad they are, if they can come in and get the food supply going and the oil supply going, will be the ones who come to power. And there is no other group in Egypt right now who can do that if Mubarak steps down other than the Muslim Brotherhood. And if it is, I ask you again, name them. Who are they?
Well, I'm glad we finally got back to Egypt. But since you mentioned Russia, Russia's not Muslim now. You know, so, I mean, just because there was a revolution in Egypt doesn't mean they're necessarily going to become Muslim. If the Muslims rush in there and try to take over power, they're not going to let anybody take over power. That's what this was all about. They're not going to let anybody do that.
No,
but if they vote somebody...
This is about, again, the one world
Russia
government.
Had a revolution once. Why don't they organize another one like that and got the people in the streets and the squares? They're doing it behind the scenes. They say, oh, my God, look at the people of Russia. They rose up against the dictators, and they overthrew them. What if that happens?
Yeah, and now every other country in the world knows that if they don't like what their government is doing, they can do the same thing. And I think that puts world leaders, the world leaders of each individual country, I think that puts them in a situation where they're going, oh, holy shit, that could happen to me. Good.
Well,
and as
I
far as the people who live in the cities and don't have a backup position...
Is that our presidents from Bush Sr. on, President Gorbachev of Russia, the leaders of China, the leaders of most of the major countries of the world, are all coming out in one chorus saying we want a one world government. Don't look at this.
And that's why we need to put. That's why we need to get them out of power. That's why we need to get them out of there. And if we remove the Bushes from our presidential history, if it had just went from Reagan to Clinton to Obama, we'd all be fine. We wouldn't be bitching about Obama because the shit the Bushes did wouldn't be an issue.
Well, George prepared the way
for Obama. You don't
understand,
Mike. It's they want to get rid of capitalism and put in a hybrid socialist communist worldwide entity. And how they do that is individual nations become irrelevant. They're basically moving away from national sovereignty around the world in order to force a one-world government. So I want to go back, and as we begin to
But wait,
here,
that's what we're saying.
Let me finish that, Mike. Let me finish, and then you can come in and comment. I've given you courtesies, and you can come in and comment. This is designed to create World War III, where basically attack Israel. They cut off the oil supply of the United States. Now, to protect their interest, Russia and China probably have to make a move on the Middle East to protect their interest as well and to keep the revolt from spreading in their direction. And now you've got the three big powers, the United States, Russia, and China, and then you've got the Islamic group. It's much more than just Islam. It's this whole effort where you've got groups that are my enemy's enemy is my enemy. You've got the United States of America pushing towards the one world government, Russia pushing towards a one world government, China pushing towards a one world government. You got the Islamic faction, which have a whole different agenda, but my enemy's enemy is the concept right now. Let's spread the Islamic revolution, and at the end, let's see who's standing. That's where we're at. This is leading to World War III. And World War III is going to lead to total global chaos. That's what this is designed to do. to create the spread of worldwide global chaos. This is just the bonfire that's been started that's going to spread around the world. Now comment and retort what I'm saying to whatever degree you want.
So we're actually agreeing with each other. We're just looking at it from different points of view. See, if it's true that all these world leaders are trying to get us into a world war government, a one world order government, and we revolt or we protest or we do whatever you call this, you know, we stand up against our government and say, hey, say, because there is no proof of this, by the way, say Obama is, you know, a Muslim and he's trying to, you know, convert the United States into a Muslim nation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And we all stand up and we go, we want this guy out of there. All right, which is kind of, you know, I'm kind of comparing that to what happened in Egypt. You know, it was kind of different, but the people stood up against their government. Now, if what you're saying is true, and that all these world leaders of individual nations are trying to turn this into a one-world government, and we don't want that, and we say, you know, we protest and we say we don't want this, okay, that's the thing to do. So these people in Egypt did it. And now you're saying that they did it because the Muslims incited it.
That's right.
Let me tell you where this where what you say sounds good, but let me show you where the error is in what you just said. Let's go back to the revolution that founded the United States of America. It's true we got into a war with this England, but what preceded that war? Here's what happened.
We had
a group of Americans who got together and said, let's form a government. Let's write a constitution. Let's figure out how we want to run this country once we take it over. And so they got together and created a political organization that was capable of fielding an army and that was capable of running a society if they should be successful in winning the war. That was a peaceful transition of a government that led to a democracy because they had a power base put in place. Here in the United States, our best hope to date is the Tea Party, which is shunned by our current government, but that is a ground roots,
well, of
grassroots effort trying to merge within the United States that says, people of America, you have an opportunity to rise up against your government in peace, key word, and we have the ability to give you a peaceful transition because a new political alternative is arising. My point is that has taken us 2 years now, and in maybe two or three more years, there'll be enough of a momentum to fill the power vacuum if whoever is in power now is displaced. But in Egypt, it came about very quickly, and there's no one there to fill that power vacuum except a very evil group of men who want to kill the Jews and who want to spread Islamic caliphate around the world and lead us into World War III. If there was a peaceful uprising occurring that was structured over two or three or 4 years that put people into place who could transition the government, then I'd say hooray, 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 we're likely to have a democratic society emerge out of Egypt. Right now, the only hope we have is in the military. Basically, the fate of Egypt rests with the military.
They're in control right now, and luckily they're doing the right thing. Fortunately, I should say, not luckily.
I hope the military will be there for years, because the Egyptian military has a record of not being ruthless and not being murderous. The police had a very bad record, but the Egyptian military really has a record of good organization.
Yeah, and it's like, just Larry, I mean, like, if you've ever been oppressed in any way, even just as a teenager growing up, and you want to go out one night and your parents say no, or had a job where your boss is just controlling and you don't agree with him, but you have to take it because he's your boss. And, you know, if you don't take it, you're going to get fired and you're not going to have a paycheck. If you've ever gone through anything like that, and, you know, you just enough builds up, and one day you just lose your temper and say, screw it. I honestly believe that's basically what happened in Egypt. They didn't plan it. They didn't think it all the way through. But I really don't necessarily think that it was orchestrated by the Muslims and Obama working with the Muslims, and they secretly incited it on Facebook and all this other stuff.
Well,
it is possible. Anything's possible.
Well, let me ask you a question then, Mike. How is it that we have an orchestrated event in Algeria that's occurring tomorrow that's been called for a protest in Algeria? It was done through the Internet. It was done through social networking. How is it that they know that there are all these rallies that are occurring in Egypt each day, and what this rally is about and what that rally is about? It's through the Internet. It's through social networking. Basically, we have one of the most powerful communication devices in the world in the Internet out there, and if you are a radical group who hopes to seize power, and you know that the majority of people right now would look at you and say, you're too dangerous, then what better strategy than to let young people who are unhappy revolt and call for a democratic society while you're sitting in the background and you're sending your emails out and you're doing your social networking and you're calling for the revolt and you're calling for the demonstrations, because ultimately you plan on using those people as a pawn and you plan on stepping in and filling the power vacuum because you know full well you have the power to do that and nobody else does. That is
so
what
you
I
honestly believe. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but you honestly believe that all these people in Egypt were just puppets and somebody was pulling their strings to get them to do that?
I believe they're very unhappy. I believe they have very legitimate reasons to revolt, but they didn't revolt last year or the year before. The year before, they revolted. Obama got into power after the one world government reached a certain point, and when all the geopolitical events came together and a power base said, it's time for a coup, and it was orchestrated. Yes, I believe it's orchestrated, and I believe the people believe that they're in control, but I believe that they are not. And if you want to wager $100 on it, Mike, I'll bet you that before the year is out that we will see an Islamic government in Egypt. I'll bet you $100 right this very second.
You know, I'll tell you what, Larry, I don't bet, and I'll tell you why I don't bet. It's because whenever I do bet, I'm wrong, and I lose. And I don't care about losing $100, but if I'm going to bet on that country, I hope I win that bet. But being said, when I do bet, I lose. I don't want to jinx their future by me betting. But if you're right, I'll give you $100.
We won't make it given what you said. But I go back to the quote from the Lieutenant General earlier.
Why do you think the Eagles have not won a Super Bowl in like 10 years?
I
haven't been to the Super Bowl in 10 years.
I don't know, but I'm superstitious. that one I wouldn't want to touch.
Well, you know, I'm just looking at Twitter, and one of the guys that follows me, he just tweeted something. I love it. He said 90% of everything is all crap.
Hey, life is what? It's 10%.
So
how's that saying go, man? Life is 10% how you make it, 90% how you take it.
Yeah, he said 90% of everything is pure
crap.
I thought that's a good one.
It is. It is. Because there's a whole bunch of hype around anything. And Larry, you're right about one thing. I don't know. There's many underlying reasons, you know, about what happened in Israel. But the thing is, like now that this did happen, and now that there is social networking and stuff like that, and I believe that did play a part in it because people have the communication now.
When Cairo cut off
their cell phones and their cell phones and their internet, that's when they started to get violent and they turned that shit right back on. But yeah, you're right about the social networking. And now that this
has
happened,
social networking. On Facebook, they have the Day of Rage and all that. I posted an event. Let's take an hour of prayer, you know, on Sunday, you know, at 6 o'clock. Facebook is hosting, somebody is hosting a Day of Rage, a Day of Riots, a Day of this, a Day of that. So why don't we just host an hour of prayer for Israel and U.S. and the world at large?
Here's a prediction I'm going to make.
You just posted that, Dolly?
I posted it, yeah. An hour of prayer, an event.
You started that?
On Facebook, yeah. An hour of prayer. Say this Sunday at 6 o'clock. If everybody takes 1 hour and sits down and really prays and meditates, and of course I'm going to say pray for Israel, pray for the U.S., and pray for the world at large. An hour of prayer.
Yeah,
I mean, if people get on there.
Not Israel, but, well, Israel too, but Egypt right now, because, you know, look what they're going through.
They had hosted Jew Day. I mean, Kill a Jew Day. Facebook hosted the event called Kill a Jew Day.
I was just about to say. Yeah, I see the weirdest shit come up on Facebook, and I don't believe people send me invites to half the crap. You know, I just decline it, but I can't believe some of the stuff on.
I didn't send any invitations out. I just made it public to host an hour of prayer. I don't care if people respond, but just if they see it, maybe they'll say, hey, maybe I'll do that, just an hour of prayer, of straight prayer for an hour. If we get a lot of people straight praying for an hour, that does work, you know, even.
Yeah, well, send me an invite. Send me an invite because I'll never find it. And Larry, just to finish up what I was saying, and I'm going to let you talk as long as you want to because we took up all of your hour, so we're going to give you the next 20 minutes just to sum up what you prepared to say tonight. the only thing I had to say is you're right about the social networking and, you know, the worldwide communication and stuff like that. And it does tie in with, you know, what it says in the Bible about communication. How is it? Like, they talk about the super church and all that stuff. And if you look back to the, I forget what book of the Bible it's in. That's bad, I know, but Noah's Ark. You know, that's one of the reasons God wiped out the world that time, you know, 40 days of rain and stuff, you know, and then he confused people's languages. And now people's languages aren't confused anymore. You know, we have all these ways of communication. And you're right about that, because now that everybody's seen what's gone on in Egypt and they see that the people prevailed, I ain't going to say anarchy. I did make that the title of this broadcast here, but I'm not going to say anarchy. But the people prevailed. And, you know, if they did it, any nation can do it, any body of people. Oh, and about the revolution and what you said about the army, we had Minutemen, and those were just ordinary people. You know, that was your blacksmith and your cobbler and your your butcher. You know, they all ran out there and grabbed a gun, and we all fought Britain together. And that's how we became a country. It wasn't just about the Constitution. It wasn't just about the Bill of Rights. It wasn't just about the Declaration of Independence. It took a lot of bloodshed to get there. And it wasn't an army.
But it also took an organization. That was my point.
It took a couple of key leaders. There were like 15 leaders, you know? I mean, there was George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and, you know, a couple of those guys. And outside of that, it wasn't many people. You know, we all just got together, and if we saw a redcoat coming, you know, Paul Revere ringing the bell, riding down the road. The redcoats are coming. The redcoats are coming. Minutemen grabbed their guns, ran out there, and kicked their asses.
And we couldn't have
won. I know I'm summarizing, but...
We couldn't have won the war without the support of France.
Okay, now you just made me feel bad about what I said about France in the beginning of this broadcast.
Did you know
that
France
gave us
wrote
the
off our
Liberty.
Debt to them? France wrote off our debt to them. It was so enormous, they wrote it off so that we didn't have to pay it back. They totally and completely supported us. They sent military personnel. They sent money. They sent supplies. They sent troops. France really, really did help us.
That is true. I forgot about that. Let me chime in and
basically draw that back to today, if I can, Dolly. What you've just inadvertently drawn out here is that you can never, ever look at a situation as it's occurring on the ground in that one location and say that that's the whole picture. So why did France do what France did? Because France and England were mortal enemies. They had been enemies forever. And there was a power struggle in Europe between particularly France and England, but also between Spain. And it was in the best interest of Spain to see to it that England was engaged in this war. And so that's where we have to look here and say, where do interests outside of Egypt start to come into play if you're talking about trying to form a one-world government? And my contention is that more important than money in a modernized, mechanized society is oil. And if they can control and destabilize the Middle East, they can then destabilize the world. And then they can force the one world government into formation. That's really where I see this big, big, big picture is whoever's got the oil, that area of the world has to be brought into chaos in order to spread that chaos throughout the rest of the world. that's what I think, see as the big picture here.
You're not going to get any argument from me. I used to be very politically naive until I worked for my previous boss, and for a while I was so after I stopped working for him, I had absolutely no respect for any government, including our own. As my daughter said, I was so far left, I was ready to fall off. You know, so I've been on that side, and I know what they do, and I know how they organize it. I've done it, you know, so I know what for of I speak, you know. I've been there. I've done it. I've turned arguments around to my benefit. You know, I've done this because I felt intellectually superior, and I knew that what I was doing was the best for mankind. What I was doing was pure crap. So I kind of made the 180-degree turn and came back to my roots. But I've been there, and I've done it, and I think we did a lot of damage at that time on the circuit, and I actually regret that.
And what you just said, Dolly, I really respect that, because that is exactly how I know that the left-wingers think, is that they think that they're going to do what's right for everybody. And even if it is what's right, not everybody wants what's right. People want their own will. Even God doesn't interfere with that. God gives us our own free will. If we make the mistake, it's our mistake. And, you know, well, he'll forgive us and stuff like that, but we'll have to suffer the consequences. And, you know, it's like Nancy Pelosi, when she made that comment, you know, we're doing what we know is best. Well,
that woman
can't vote for you.
I don't know if she can even open her mouth to make a comment. I don't know how her lips work. She's had so much Botox in her face that she can't. Can barely move it.
Well, it was just the point that we didn't elect her. Actually, she was elected by Congress to be Speaker of the House, but she wasn't elected by the people to do what's best for us. Neither was Obama. Neither was any other president in history. They were elected to represent us. Okay,
exactly.
We didn't elect them to decide what is best for us. Okay, it might be best for us. It might not be. That's a debate. Fine. Each issue is up to debate. Health care, everything else is all up to debate. Okay? But the thing is, we didn't elect them to decide for us what is best for us and what isn't.
See the difference between a democracy and a republic? And what was it Thomas Jefferson said? When the people realize they can vote themselves whatever they want, your government will end. When people realize they can vote in whatever they want. And that's exactly right. Now people can vote in. I want an entitlement. I can vote that in. And as Margaret Thatcher says, I love that quote, socialism doesn't work. Eventually you run out of other people's money.
Yep.
You know, but, yeah, you're right.
Going back to...
There are representatives. They're not there to decide for us.
Going back to earlier conversations that we've had, Mike, you know, this is really... You know, a global initiative has been going on for a couple of hundred years, and it's about power. It's about the fact that the people, the international bankers who run the world, and their colleagues, the major corporations of the world, want to have a society in which they don't have to report to 200 different nations for regulations and rules. They can run things and have a world's biggest monopoly, and then this is the thing that really is hard to believe, and it doesn't have a lot to do with this conversation, but I want to bring it out because it is truly the central reason behind the formation of the one world government, and it's this. It's that not only do they want power, do they want to control us, but the whole concept of what Obama's talking about globalism, the green movement, and about cap and trade, and about global warming, is all a ruse, because the real issue is that the scientists who report to these governments know that we have a serious population issue. It took 10,000 generations to get 2 billion people, and now in 45 years, we've gone from 2 billion people to 7 billion, and it's expected by 2050 will be to 9 billion, and basically... We are in the midst of the sixth mass extinction of the world. And so all of this chaos is designed to create World War III, to lead to world famine, and to lead to billions of people losing their lives in order to create a smaller population that can live within the resource capacities of the planet. And that is the real, real big picture. That's the end game, is to create a scenario in which they can purge society, because we can't keep going with the kind of population explosion that we're having. We will overtax the ability of the planet. And what's even more crucial than oil is water. And you've got China, which is, I don't know if it's the most populated or second most populated region of the world. They've only got 7% of the world's water, and water is grossly, grossly contaminated. And you've got the United States of America, you know, the whole western half of the United States of America sits on one of the biggest underground aquifers in the world. But here's what most people don't realize about it. That aquifer is not replenished by rainwater. That aquifer is larger than all the Great Lakes combined, substantially larger, but it was created by glaciers and glacier melt. And we are going to have a situation in the United States of America, which is one of the largest grain belts in the world, where in the next few years we are going to deplete that aquifer, and half of the United States is going to become a desert, and the 100 nations that we supply food to will no longer get food from the United States of America. And then you can take the situation in Africa, and we can go on down the road. This world is not capable of supporting 7, 8, or 9, or 10 billion people, and the people in power know that, and they're moving us towards a world with 1.5 to 2 billion people at a maximum.
That's what they mean when they say going green, huh?
Well, I guess so.
Yeah, when they say going green, they mean exterminating people. Yeah, that's yeah.
Actually,
they say Genghis Khan, you know, he did one of the most green acts in history, you know, because he killed so many people.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, well, I mean, there's some basis to that theory.
I mean, I've got quotes in my book from some U.S. think tanks. I don't have them pulled right now, but I can kind of paraphrase it. One of the U.S. think tanks calls themselves the Rider of the Pale Horse, and they say that their goal is God's goal is to create, and their goal is to destroy, and they have the mission of exterminating, I don't know how many, 300 and some thousand people per day in order to keep the population in balance. And they go on to say that fully one-third to one-half of the world population must be exterminated for the benefit of society.
And how is this up to them to decide?
Power. If they have the power to do it, the power to control the oil, to control the water, to control the governments of the world, then they will do that. Because, see, the thing that they see right now is we're consuming oil at an alarming rate, and they don't want us to have other alternatives like hydrogen, like that could be produced on demand, or to have, you know, effective solar energy. We've got a solar cell that's now 1,500 times more efficient than anything we had before. We've got a magnetic engine.
Don't forget about wind.
We've got all kinds of alternatives, and they don't want us to have any alternative that cannot be metered, that is not available through the grid, that is not in control of the corporations. And so basically, they're in control of the corporations, their control of the money means their control of the power. And if you look at the population of the world, here's what you need to understand. One of the reasons the world stayed at a very low population level was partly because of medicine, but it was also because of energy. Population began to control when we learned how to tap into coal and learned how to use coal in order to drive machinery to increase our productivity. And then it skyrocketed when we learned how to use oil. And if we lose oil and we lose our primary mechanism for dodging and running our society, then society falls back into a caveman era. And again, that's what this is about. You choke the Middle East, you choke the oil, you choke the oil, you bring all the nations of the world to their knees, and you create starvation, you create famine, you create chaos, you usher in the one world government, and then they're in control of population control. It's horrible. It sounds terrible, but it's incredibly well documented in their book.
And we're hoping that, you know, of course, I hope none of this occurs. I'm just preparing in the event that it should. I hope that none of it occurs. I don't want to see this happen. I don't think anyone in their right mind wants to see something like this happen. But I think it's extremely important that we get the administration that we have out of power and quickly, you know, to prevent some of these things happening. Because he is a leader in this area. His foreign policy is not a failure. He knows exactly what he's doing.
That's what you just said, Dolly, that you can't imagine how anybody would want that to happen. And that's what concerns me when I hear, you know, I'm not saying Larry's wrong about anything he's saying. You know, these theories make sense. But, you know, it's terrifying to think about the fact that the people, you know, our president and other world leaders, you know, might be secretly plotting this or thinking this.
Yes,
and
that's very scary.
My touchstone as a Christian is the Bible. I keep going back to the 300 prophecies in the Bible, and it clearly talks about World War III. And just think about how many people would be killed in a World War III with the sophistication that we have. And then if the oil shut off, how many other people would starve? And then without sanitation, what would happen if the plagues set in because we didn't have appropriate sanitation? And then I look at the Bible, and it talks about the seas turning to blood. And I look at the Bible, and it talks about the seals being broken, and a third of the population being killed, and then another seal being broken, and then a bowl being poured out, and then a bugle being blown. And by the time you're done, I think something in the order of 9/10 of the world's population has been destroyed. That's biblical. And that is exactly what I'm seeing the preparations being made for, and it's all because we go back to energy, and they know that with an exploding population, that we do not have enough resources long-term to support the kind of global population that we have. Therefore, the powers that be feel that those resources belong to them as the power mongers of the world, and the only way to protect those resources is to create chaos, which leads us into war and into famine and into drastic population reduction. That's what this is all about. And I know that sounds horrible, and I know nobody wants to believe it, but it's biblical, and it plays out in a lot of different factual ways. And water is the key, along with oil. You choke off water, you choke off oil, and society goes into chaos.
Absolutely. Like I said, at one time I was very, very politically naive, and it took all six years before I would even look at anything political again. You know, and I didn't want to do it again, but, you know, I do it for children and grandchildren. I don't want to see, you know, I used to say, hey, I've done my duty. It's somebody else's responsibility to carry the torch. And now it's like, wait a minute, everybody has to carry the torch.
And I want to come back to something that Mike said. We seem adversarial through the night, but we're really not. We're just coming with different information.
It's called a debate.
I want to give Mike's position a bit of credence here for a second, if I can. The reason I have the position that I have is because I'm a student of history. And I go back and I look at all of these wars that have created and the famines that have occurred, and I look at the political situations that led up to them. I look at the idealistic, hope that started at the beginning of these things and the reality that concluded at the end, and I can connect dots and I can therefore conclude the likelihood that what the general who I quoted earlier said was going to happen is going to happen, and that is that we're going to have the Islamic Brotherhood seize power. So basically, though, I get my vantage point from history. History
wasn't Colin Powell who said
that,
was it?
My desktop is calling me and is mad at me because I'm so late. And what I'm also going to do is I'm going to call Domino's. I've got order pizza while I still have food out there. Okay? Because my favorite pizza place is now out of business, Papa John's. So I have to take Domino's as a second choice.
They're out of business.
Yeah, they're out of business here anyway. You know, I have to. Damn,
Papa
didn't they
John's?
Know that was my favorite? Yeah, Papa John's
I just saw them advertised on the Super Bowl. They're, maybe this
I
year
love
locally
Papa
went
John's.
Out of business.
I love Papa John's, but it's no longer here, so I got to call Domino's. And I'll see
you
all.
We'll try to wrap up then. So you're going to go, Dolly?
Yeah, I'm going to go. Larry, you got to get on Facebook. Mike, I just sent you an invitation to an hour of prayer. The people are starting to respond, so let's hope it does.
Okay.
I'll repost that myself.
So
okay,
I'm going to
try
to wrap up if you allow me to. You guys take
okay,
care.
Okay, you go ahead and wrap up. Just don't stick any drugs up your butt. I got to go. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Doc.
All right,
thank
so Mike, to kind of defend your position, here's where I think what you believe comes from. My point is history. And in my book, I talk about how our various systems have been hijacked, and one of them is the media. So if you're not relying on the long, long, several thousand year view of history, then you're looking at more current events. And if the media has been hijacked by those who have special interest and they want to drive an agenda, then everything is skewed to driving the public towards certain conclusions. And I think that the vast majority of the public is getting their information from current events and not from a long view of history. And that's why I felt it was so important to write this book, because I think if you look at current events and you look at history, you start to draw two very, very different sets of decisions when you look at political events as they unfold. And that's, I think, the point, counterpoint. So it was good that we had the debate going on your side and me on my side and Dolly kind of in between, because it gives people, you know, both perspectives. I think if my watch is right, though, we're about to go off the air. So do you want to say any last thing?
We got like 60 seconds. Just that I appreciate it. You did a great job tonight, sir. As always, it's been a pleasure. And if need be, we can pick this conversation up next week, along with whatever new topic we have for next week.
All right, I'll be in touch with you during the week then.
All right, thank you, sir. You have a great night.
All right, take care, Mike. Bye-bye.
All right, you too, Larry. Thanks, everybody, for listening. This is MJH for Dolly Miller Brennan, and that's been Larry Ballard, LibertyCrusade.com. You can find him at. All right, everybody. Peace, God bless, and I'm out of here. Later.
You have been listening to the MJH Experience on Blog Talk Radio.
Produced by CommunicationCreations.com.
Do you know where you're going to?